Reward your customers with Referred. You have a D2C business with an app, and you want to grow through referrals. And that's where Referred comes in. Referred installs in minutes and includes all the rewards you could ever need. Customize the rewards to fit your brand and change the look so it fits your interface perfectly. Oh, and it's completely free. Head to tryreferred.com to find out more. That's TRYREFERD.com.
Take a chance on somebody, because if you think back to your life and where you are, my guess is there's at least one person who took a chance on you when you probably didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, that's our responsibility now, is to like be that chance for somebody else. So if you're in the seat, do it. Go do the thing. Pick yourself. Go create. Go do that thing you've been dying to do. Just do it. Don't make the excuses. But on the flip side, if you're in the opportunity to help somebody else and take a chance on somebody, absolutely do it, because you could absolutely change their life.
Hello, my name is Lauren D'Souza, and you're listening to Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast. More and more companies are wanting to focus on retaining customers, but what exactly are the powers of customer retention? And how are companies using it to keep their customers coming back for more? That's what we're here to find out. Welcome back, everybody. Joining us today is James Lorraine. James actually got his start as an electrical engineer before journeying into sales and freelance copywriting, and he's now the head of growth at AMP. James has vast experience in leveraging B2B content strategies and copywriting to engage and, more importantly, retain customers. James, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so very, very much for having me.
Awesome. Well, how we typically get these episodes started is learning a little bit more about you. And what I'm really curious is how on earth you went from engineering to the world of marketing, because we're so completely opposite of each other. So I'm very excited. So maybe we can start off by you giving me a little bit more of an introduction about yourself and telling me how you went from engineering to marketing.
Sure. I feel like society as a whole, we expect people to have their whole life figured out by like 17. So when you're 17, you go to college, or 18, you know, depending, and you're supposed to have it all figured out. And I was going to look up the stat this morning because it popped into my head, but it's like something like 24%, or maybe it's 40%. It's something in there below 50 of people actually do what they went to school for. So for me, I remember the day I was sitting on like my kitchen counter and I asked my mom, what should I do with my life? And she said, you know, you're really good at math and science, be an engineer. And I'm like, okay, great. So that's what I did. made the decision easy. So I actually did 10 years of medical device engineering and realized that I really didn't like that kind of
work.
Yeah. So it was really good experience. And we can look back and we're like, we'd never get to where we were today, parents we had then, but it wasn't really for me. So my aha moment was actually when I went to visit a doctor. So we were doing a drill for neurosurgery. And what I realized is what we built was not what the doctor was actually asking for. So I kind of feel like it's office space. There was that disconnect between what the customer was saying and what the engineers were doing. Yeah. And I was the person who was supposed to go between them. But that was my big moment of like, oh, when I actually sat with customers and talked with them and understood their needs and wants and what they really were asking for, like that was really exciting to me. And then I got deeper into understanding, you know, buyer motivation and why do people make the decisions they make and that underlying psychology. And it kind of awoke something that I had within me the whole time that just didn't occur to me earlier. So that's kind of what led to that transition. And I do have an interesting note on that really quick. So Nobody will hire an engineer to be a marketer because, you know, you have no experience. So there's an awesome book by Seth Godin called What to Do When It's Your Turn and It's Always Your Turn. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I haven't actually.
It's really good. And basically, it's like nobody will pick you. You have to pick yourself. You have to find your own way. So I ventured from there. I went to technical sales because sales was one step towards marketing, I thought. So I was doing semiconductor and electronic sales. And then I actually just opened my own copywriting company and one day just called myself a copywriter. And then that took off and it did really well. And I learned a ton. And then I got picked up by AMP because they were one of my clients, actually. So it's kind of one of those, if you want to pick your path, like you kind of have to make your path.
Absolutely. I really love that. Also, all respect and kudos to you for not being scared about taking that path or taking that jump, because I feel like the hardest part about switching roles so drastically is that you just don't know how to go about it. So the fact that you had the ability to just start this copywriting business and call yourself a copywriter, that's really awesome. But I'm curious to know, do you find that there's any parallels between engineering and marketing, or do you think they're completely different?
It's a good question. First, I have to say, I never said I wasn't scared.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I think that's important, though.
You didn't see you scared.
Yeah. Well, people think that I have to not be scared, you know, to make a leap like that. And it's like, no, you have to be terrified. But that usually means you're on the right path, right? That's there's a good terrified and there's
good point.
Parallels between the two. But there's two of the main professions where they are so confident in what they know is engineering and marketing. So they think they know like everything. And it's really funny because it's only in the past year I've started working with data scientists more than marketers. My whole team is data scientists and me. That I've really learned, like, data scientists are more confident in what they don't know. Marketers, engineers are more confident in what they do know. But when, if you can grasp that shift, it's really cool. And it's really interesting. You learn more when you're more confident in what you don't know.
Yeah. And I don't even know how I would even come to that thought myself, but I think it's you working with all these different types of personalities and roles and things like that, that brought that upon you, which I guess that shifts us towards how you just mentioned that you work with a bunch of data scientists and yourself. And so with your role at AMP as head of growth, what are some of the key elements of those role? Maybe tell us a little bit more about it.
So we are a small, nimble team growing, which is awesome, but at this point still small and lean, which I like. So me together with the CEO, so we have three co-founders. One of our co-founders is the CEO. Him and I kind of lead all of the marketing and sales efforts, but then customer success is also rolled into that. So since, again, we don't have leagues of people, you kind of have to run the whole thing, which is cool though, because you get to see every element. So it's like marketing can't blame sales and sales can't blame marketing and customer success just can't be angry. Like everyone has to kind of work together because it's all us, right? Same people. To your point, the other part of my job, which I find fun and challenging, is I am the sounding board for the data scientists. So why they haven't like come out and said it, but I think one of the reasons they brought me on is because I'm a normal human who speaks normal human words and not like a data scientist who speaks data scientist words. So what I love and one of my favorite things to do is the data scientists will be like, does this make any sense to you? Like it makes sense to me, but does it make sense to you? And so it's like looking at their analyses and all that and trying to figure out, how would we explain this so that like a layperson or somebody who isn't a data scientist would understand it? Because data science, it's this beautiful, there's so much nuance to it. And it is this beautiful thing in its complexity. But as marketers, we have been fed such simplistic things, like very simplistic stats. Every graph goes up and to the right. We can say things like, you know, 9 a.m. Tuesday is the best time to send a message, period. As if like that's something you can even say. So understanding with the data science, how do I translate real data into something that actual humans can understand has been fascinating.
Okay, very interesting. And I guess just to take a step back to give us, myself and our listeners, a little bit more context as we dive into this topic, because I'm very interested to know about the whole role between AI and customer retention from your point of view and your work. If we shift our focus a little bit more towards the customer retention, because that's obviously the topic that we are here today to talk about, in your opinion, how do you think that AI has changed the customer retention landscape?
I want to take a step back and talk about mobile retention, because I think the state of retention in mobile is specifically and especially bleak compared to how we think of retention. So this is, to me, this is fascinating. So 1 in 4 people only open an app one time. So think about all the apps on your phone, right? It's just clutter at some point. Or you pick one up because like you want a specific purpose. Like, ooh, that's Uber for me. If I go somewhere, I download Uber, but I live in the middle of nowhere. So Uber doesn't even operate by me. So I just uninstall it the minute I get home. But 1 in 4 people only open it one time. Yeah. Crazy. So you lose 25% of your user base like instantly. 77% are gone within 3 days. Most of those within day one. And then at the end of a month, you're left with 2 to 5% of your original users. Yeah. So it's like, if you really want a model for like a bad model for retention, apps are the way to go. So here's what blows me away though. There's 9 million apps in the app store around there. Someone downloaded yours. So if you look at like the customer acquisition side, somebody downloaded yours out of 9 million, like you won the lotto. You have a 1 in 9 million chance of getting downloaded roughly, right? But then to lose all but 2% in like 30 days is insane. It's like a total leaky bucket. So we did a deep dive because again, I work with all data scientists. So we looked at 30 million users. And what we found is even of the active ones, like when you have, I'm going to say active, when you have those users before they've churned, we can divide them into several buckets. So at any given time, you have about 2.5% who are new. So they're within 7 days. Your active users are about 5% of those users that you have before they've churned. Recent, we call, so if it's somebody who did something within the past 8 to 14 days, they've done a meaningful event, is about 2.5%. Your biggest bulk of users are your lurking users. So that's somebody who has been on the app but didn't do anything meaningful. So if I'm in e-commerce, they look, they didn't buy within the past 14 days. That's like 35%-ish. And then your inactive or the people who haven't done anything in 14 days, that's like around 60% but haven't churned. So just to put attention on like how important retention is and what retention means. Yeah. So retention doesn't just mean keeping active. That's 5%. If I can move lurking and inactive make up 90% of your user base. So if I can like move 0.1% of them to do something,
yeah,
that's better than getting every one of my active users to do something. So like that's how important and impactful retention is. So we talked about kind of the old model of marketing. You couldn't do what you can do now with AI before.
Right.
So in the old model, you would segment your users. And if it came to like an e-commerce app, so when you abandon cart, which we've all done.
Yes.
They send you a message like 30 minutes after.
Right.
And then the next day. And then 3 days later. You forgot something. What AI lets us do is help us understand user patterns and behaviors and why they've done this. So a quick example is like, sometimes I'll add something to the cart, but I want to check with my wife before I buy. You know, like I'm thinking about getting this, but I need to talk to her and I can talk to her tonight, but I'm not going to talk to her right now.
Yeah.
So that message in 20 minutes is an annoyance. But to somebody who's flighty and just forgot, oh, somebody texted me and I went and that message in 20 minutes is useful. So how do you know which is which?
Mm-hmm.
So this is how I think AI is going to change retention is because it will allow you to see the patterns and understand down to the individual user and behavior right. And start to react that way. Since that kind of they're a best fit, which means they really don't fit for anybody. They're just kind of the best we can do at the time with rigid rules. We're going to see the rigid rules start to disappear and be replaced with something that's more adaptive, that kind of learns each user and speaks to each individual user.
And I guess too, on that point, you make this great conversation or this great topic about the idea that each of these users is obviously different. Because I think in this day and age, there's so many companies competing for attention that you need to find a way to be not even personalized, but almost hyper-personalized because everybody's going after personalization given the fact of the rise of AI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I guess one question I would probably have if I was sitting, let's say like in our listener seat, who they're probably working at a e-commerce company, maybe they're running their own, maybe their business or the company that they work with is on Shopify. I'm probably thinking to myself, how on earth do I go about doing this? Because it makes a lot of sense in terms of what you're saying that customer A needs to ask his wife later on, but customer B just forgot momentarily. So how do we target them both?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question to put this all together is what are some questions that people should be thinking about when leveraging this kind of AI in these retention efforts so that they don't piss off customer A who needs to talk to his wife and they target customer B who just forgot and needs to be reminded just quickly so that they get back to that cart and they finish that purchase.
One of the biggest challenges for me for marketing this company is I don't have a good alternative. And here's what I mean. Normally, like I like the ebook. So if we're talking about content writing and things like that, I like the approach of give someone something they can do actionable right now. That's very helpful. And then you show them that your product can like swoop in and solve all their problems. You know, so like you could do it yourself manually, but you could just pick up our product. There really isn't a good way to do this with a lot of the tools and things that are out there. So the right answer would be, I have found, and this is anecdotal because I don't have solid data behind it, but people tend to operate the same kind of way.
Yeah.
So users who tend to want to check with their spouse will want to check with their spouse. The users who are flighty will want to be flighty.
Right.
So the answer is, you know, you test a user with a message after 20 minutes. Did they buy or did they not buy? And there's also a data sparsity problem, which is most people don't buy, period, right? So you have to deal with that. But anyway, if they do buy at the 20 minute, maybe the 20 minute's a good reminder. If they don't buy until the 1 day, well, then maybe the 1 day is better for that user. And again, it tends to be habitual by user.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is like, how do you listen for that? And how do you act? So apps are, the thing that makes apps special is they are instrumented as far as they have an event stream or click stream. So anything you do in an app, surprise, you're being recorded. If you swipe, if you click, if you tap, all of that has the event and then a timestamp to it and maybe some metadata around it. But we can listen to that, again, at the individual user level that you could not do with a normal sized marketing team and then discover and uncover those patterns for that particular user and also draw associations in between users. So if you wanted to do this today, without an AI system, you would literally have to set up and try, send a user, does the user respond after 20 minutes or not? And then next time that user comes available for a message, you know, do the one that worked best for them and hope it still works. So really it's A/B testing.
Right.
But at any given time, like a team can run like a small handful of A/B tests. And even like the super apps we work with that have millions of users and giant teams, you can only run so many tests at once before they start to interfere and overlap and your data stops being valuable. We, at any given time with the user using our apps, we're running tens of thousands of A/B tests at a time and applying the results. And that's something you can only really do with AI. That's what
right.
AI is not for writing blog posts.
Yeah.
It's for like this type of stuff,
and
right?
These,
so this is where it's most
too.
Powerful.
Very interesting. And so I guess you touched on it slightly, but I wanted to get a little bit more. So we talked about some of the actionable ways that someone can think about, how do I implement this myself, or how can I leverage AI so that it helps me listen to what the customer is looking for? Mm-hmm. How have you experienced, or how have you seen some common challenges that companies face when trying to implement AI and customer retention? So maybe not AMP, obviously, but companies that maybe you work with, or maybe companies that you've seen in the past. I'm sure there are some challenges that come with the growth and change of this kind of landscape. So curious to know your thoughts about that.
I think there's two main things. And the first one is not the company's fault. The first one's the tool's fault. Most tools right now are rushing to be AI enabled.
Yeah.
Which means they're just adding AI features, but it's not like a true part of the product. So like my go-to example is like I use an email, like an ESP email service provider, like everybody does. They're all the same. So there's no point in even calling one out. They have a writing assistant. We'll write your email for you. And you click that button and it's garbage. Yes. Or I just used today, I use Veed and I love Veed. So I'm not smacking. Veed is wonderful for video editing. And they have a like, we'll generate a blog post for you. And you're like, great. It's not great. I mean, it's a start, you know, but it's not great. So you have to see past all these companies that are just adding AI in a way that's not really meaningful.
Right.
And a company that was built with AI at the center. So we were built mid-2020 and AI native. So I mean, AI is critical to what we do. But it's funny, we actually avoided the buzzword for years just because it's not what people typically think of as AI now. Now everyone thinks of AI as like a writing assistant in an LLM, which is a very small, small piece of AI. But anyway, the first problem is the tool, because you can't implement AI effectively if your tools haven't implemented AI effectively.
Right.
Now you're just writing cold emails that are crappy, and that's not good. But the second one is more important. You have to treat like a true AI system functions differently from a non-AI native system. And you have to learn to adapt and work with it. So you can't just dictate everything to an AI model.
Right.
And when you get data out, it's more of, this has been interesting for me, the non-data scientist. Instead of like, if I tested two things and one worked better than the other, sometimes you don't ask any questions. You're just one worked better than the other. And I take the one, I implement it. Okay. With an AI system, you have to kind of ask the question of like, why is it doing that? Why is it acting that? You almost have to treat it more like a coworker sometimes than a tool. It's not an Excel sheet. Yeah, I mean, it is. And some days, you're like, why is this happening? And you have to like root cause it. But people are afraid to let go and like let an AI run its course. And even things that are really, really low risk, it's just the fear of letting go of something. And the second piece of that is we have to find the more useful thing we can be doing once we do let go. So I think the biggest problem with implementation is we feel like business has to keep being business as usual. And we still have to do our rigid functions that we've always done the same way we always have.
Yeah.
But with the AI implementation, like you have to just learn to work with it, let it make you better, and then find ways to improve it. Like it's interesting. Like I said, it's acting with a coworker instead of an Excel sheet.
Absolutely. And I think you put that perfectly, because I think the thing is a lot of people, I think this is actually a very timely topic to talk about how this all plays a role, especially in something like customer retention, or when you're trying to continuously surprise, delight, and upsell your customers. But I think the way that you put it is really important, because it's figuring out how do you work alongside this new technology or this new tool or this new thing as a coworker, for example, versus thinking, oh, it's going to replace everything I do, and not finding that value add when you use AI to help work on some of those other tasks. So I really like the way you put it there, because I think it makes it very clear for someone to think about, how do I use something like AI for its best intentions, for learning customer insights, for doing these things at scale, for understanding how can we change the way that we operate with our customers using something like AI. and not just help me write this blog post that's going to turn out just robotic sounding things 24/7. So I really like the way that you put that all together. And I guess, actually, funny enough, turning this on its head and going to the other topic that you're very knowledgeable and have a lot of expertise on around content and copywriting, which combats having the AI write everything for you. I'm curious to know your thoughts and your strategies around how you can use content and compelling copywriting to improve something like customer retention. So dive into that whole topic right there.
Oh, no, this is good. I think AI empowers the type of AI I'm talking about, which is not writing everything for you, but we call it intelligent distribution. I'm getting the right message to the right person at the right time. Okay. It empowers copywriters to be more creative. Right. So the thing is, here's an easy example. So we'll take a subscription app. I'm working with a couple running apps. So like, let's think of a running app. So I'm trying to get you to run every day. I'm trying to get people to run every day. Or maybe not every day, but you know, if they haven't run, I'm going to send them a message that says, you haven't done your run today, run today. So I have the copywriter write the one message. I program it in so that it sends, if you haven't run within a week, send a message. I haven't seen you out there, get out there and run. Okay. The problem is, if we're thinking of true retention, all the stats I mentioned earlier, people are turning it off. There's an effect where your brain will literally turn off similar messages. So if I keep sending you, run today, run today, run today, run today, pretty soon you just swipe it, you dismiss it, you forget about it, and you probably uninstall the
app. In there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if I can tap into the reason why you want to run, like why did you want to run? Is it because swimsuit season is coming up? Is it because you're recovering from surgery? Is it because your doctors said you have heart issues and you need to run? Is it because, why is that? And if I can tap into it, then I can do some really creative copy things. Like T-minus 3 weeks till beach time. Like, oh crap, you read that and you're like, I gotta run, right? So typically when you write the message in traditional CRM, you write a handful of messages. You might write some every day, but like, for example, that reminder message is a message that gets sent to people. And maybe you have two, three different versions, but primarily one. Our typical customer writes anywhere between 2,000 and 100,000 different messages. So like,
100,000.
We need copywriters.
That is
crazy. It sounds intimidating. We have ways of doing it that are not actually AI. We actually don't use AI to write. We can, but we typically don't.
Wow.
But because it's going to appeal to you differently, we need messages for every user, for every motivation, for every offer in the app, and a few different versions so our model can find the right one to keep engaging. So if I send you T-minus 3 weeks till beach time, well, again, you're going to tune that out pretty soon.
Yeah.
Very quickly too. So if I start sending you like, this would be silly, but if I start sending you like ads for bathing suits, you're like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean? Like you can get so creative in how you interact with people if that's their motivation. So I think it helps copywriters flourish and helps content teams flourish because you can explore all these things that you previously couldn't because you had to find one that works for everybody. Now I can write all kinds of stuff and let the AI decide who it will resonate best with.
And I think also just how you talked about the user journey, I think it's so, so important. But almost asking yourself, at least what I learned from our conversation today, is asking yourself, what am I listening for? What's that specific thing that I want to be learning about this kind of customer so I can understand customer A who needs to talk to his wife and customer B who just forgot and needs a little nudge. And so I think even just adding that actionable, almost that action task or something like that in the user journey makes it easier to understand how to go about these things. Because it can be abstract, there can be a lot to figure out. It can be hard to know where to start. So I like that thinking around what you're almost listening for that customer so that you can understand what are all these different groups looking for, which I think is quite interesting.
The data scientist will tell me, goes back to the very first thing we talked about. Marketers are overly confident. So remember, that is an assumption. Everything you think is an assumption, like everything.
So
if you think the next logical thing is I send you the repair kit and the wipes, that works for some people. That does not work for other people. That's where AI allows you to level up beyond the user journey because each user is on their own journey. I have data science visualization. It looks more like a cobweb than a straight line.
Yeah.
So yeah. So being sensitive to all that too and being remembering that the best journey you build is awful for the majority of your users.
Yeah. And I think honestly, I was just thinking about there is a subscription. So it's not Dollar Shave Club. I know that's the famous one, the one that everyone talks about. I think it's called Flamingo, if I'm not mistaken, more geared towards women and shaving products. And I remember the first time around when I was looking at it or just interested in the product itself, they said that they were going to send you a refill every month or something like that. And I was thinking, oh, that's great. Like you want the fresh blade, you want it to be nice and sharp, all that fun stuff. but they mentioned that they were also going to send a new handle every single time. And to me, in my head, I was thinking that's such a waste because I know they're just going to pile up. I'm not going to throw out the whole razor just to start a new one. I'd rather just detach the head and put the new one on. And then I noticed like pretty soon after they changed that right away, because I think they realized that it was an assumption that they made that people want a new fresh thing every month, but it was just missing the piece, that it was just the headpiece, not the whole body of it. But the fact is they had to make that assumption to figure out what on earth to do next, because you have to run some sort of experiment to get to the next best thing. So I couldn't agree more with you there. And I think assumptions are made to be broken and to be figured out so you can find that insight or that intelligence.
Because there's a lot of those dollar shave club, Harry shave. The assumption, why once a month?
Yeah.
Like, so here's another one though. But to my point is someone like me who I'd shave if I am forced to. So like I bought a safety razor. I have the like replaceable, whatever. I haven't bought new razors and I don't even know when. So I'm a bad customer. But either way, some people, their cadence is a lot longer. Some people, their cadence is faster.
Yeah.
So it's like the minute we realize absolutely everything is an assumption, we realize there are some users that could be twice a month. Yeah, and they would probably pay more for twice a month because once a month is too long. There are other people who only want it every 2 months. So by shipping them every month, they're building a pile of razors. What am I going to do with these?
Yeah.
So it's like literally everything is an assumption. That's where AI helps bring those patterns for the individual, which is really like the next level, right?
Yeah. Very interesting. And I think throughout this entire episode, the key insight here is actually comes down to that assumption, because the fact is when you're thinking about AI and customer retention, when you're thinking about compelling copywriting and content, these things are always a test. And also, it's a nice reminder that you have to continuously iterate on that and be able to understand, but you can use something like AI to help you along that. So I really appreciate all the insights that you shared and brought to the table, because I think it's really interesting to look at it from a data perspective. And I think it's really important because there's so much talk about data out there, but actually knowing how to go about using it is the really important thing. So I'm sure our listeners will be very, very intrigued by understanding how to go about it and all those actionable insights that you shared. So thank you very much for that. And before I let you go, we have a quick little lightning round that we like to do. So we always end off on three very quick questions and a piece of advice, and then we'll be on our way. So when I ask you the question, just think of what comes to mind first, and then we'll take it from there. All right. So first question in the lightning round is, curious to know your thoughts on this one. Do you honestly think the customer is always right?
I think the customer is what the customer is. And I think right or wrong are labels and perceptions that we put on top of our customers' actions to overly simplify it. So it's kind of like what we talked about here. I think right and wrong is an attempt to mask the true complexity of our actual customers. So I don't think customers are right or wrong. They just are.
Interesting. I knew it was going to be something interesting like that.
Does that make sense?
It does. And it's abstract at the same time. So it's making me think. So it doesn't, but in a good way. It's an assumption at the end of the day. All right. Second question. What three attributes does everyone in marketing need to have?
I think the first one, I think, has been another theme of this podcast, which would be humility, right? So understanding that even the things we know, we don't really know, and that's okay. Like, but the hard part is getting the rest of management to believe that's okay. Humility is important. I think good listening skills, understanding customers, actually talking to an actual squishy live human customer is important. And then I would say, obviously, creativity and some level of foresight.
I love that. It sounds like a perfect blend, because I think you can be more creative when you have that humility that it's okay if things don't work out that first time. So definitely appreciate that one. All right. Last but not least in the lightning round, which clothing brand would you love to help market and why?
So this is funny. My wife buys my clothes. If I had my way, I would never buy clothes again. It's depressing for me. I just don't like clothes. Do you know Duluth?
I do not.
I don't know if they're regional or not. The engineer in me loves them. They have ingenious products. They have like armpit vents so you don't sweat. Yep. And they have like, they came up with all this creative stuff. I don't know what's special about them, but they have underwear that's called Buck Naked, but it's Buck like the deer.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like a very woodsy theme. But then all their ads are like, pick up your essentials for every season. Like they're the most like absolutely, they drop the ball. Like the products are so interesting, but the ads are like everyone, I think their tagline's like highly capable clothing, but like they miss the mark. So I would love to bring like the creativity that already exists in the product and like apply it to the ads. And it already seems like a super fun brand. So I think that would probably get my vote.
All right. Very interesting. Well, if I see you working with Duluth one day, I guess we'll find out.
If you're listening, Duluth, hit me up.
Yeah, they're like, ooh, James. We have an idea. That's awesome.
There we go.
All right. And last but not least, we just always like to end on a piece of advice because I think it's a nice way to tie the whole episode together. So is there a piece of marketing or life advice that someone shared with you once that has always stayed with you?
I think this goes back to the almost very beginning of how I got my start in marketing. That book, if you can pick it up, pick it up. It's called What to Do When It's Your Turn and It's Always Your Turn by Seth Godin. Seth has also written something along the lines of pick yourself, choose yourself. Nobody is going to choose you, choose yourself. So if you want to make a change, if there's something big, audacious you want to go do, do it. Don't wait for the world to make the opportunity for you, go do it. But there's a flip side, which is take a chance on somebody, because if you think back to your life and where you are, my guess is there's at least one person who took a chance on you when you probably didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, that's our responsibility now, is to like be that chance for somebody else. So if you're in the seat, do it. Go do the thing. Pick yourself. Go create. Go do that thing you've been dying to do. Just do it. Don't make the excuses. But on the flip side, if you're in the opportunity to help somebody else and take a chance on somebody, absolutely do it, because you could absolutely change their life. And it's something that usually doesn't take that much investment from us.
That's awesome. I love that. And actually just ties the whole thing together really nicely. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for joining us on the episode today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Awesome. I'll see you later, James.
Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast, is brought to you by Gameball. To find out how you can turn visitors and occasional buyers into loyal, lifetime customers, head to gameball.co. Make sure to subscribe to Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, so you never miss an episode. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next time.